Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm sitting here today with Dee Dee Kiso from SixFigureFundraising.com and BenevolentAuctions.com. She had a $10 million 2019. Dee Dee, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Well, I hope so. Based on our pre-interview, you got me all jazzed up, ready to go. I'm ready to take on the world and like revolutionize the way that nonprofits behave because they're not in that joyful or prosperity space like they should be. But we're going to talk today about the six-figure fundraising formula. Is that right, Dee Dee?
Absolutely. It's magic.
It's magic. And based on your attitude and the joy oozing out of your face, I know you can't see her today, people, but she's on camera with no makeup. And I asked her why you would even need makeup. I don't understand how ladies work, but we're here today with you. Tell us a little bit about what you do with the six-figure fundraising and Benevent Auctions.
Thanks, Travis, for having me. It is a joy to be here. I raise six figures, multiple six figures. I raise millions annually. And what I do is I have a six-figure fundraising formula that breaks down my 30 years of fundraising into steps that can be used over and over again to raise six figures, multi-six figures, even in organizations who've traditionally raised maybe just $20,000 or less.
Wow. I thought I was going to have a follow-up to wow, but I don't. Wow. It's amazing that the attitude of the guests and the people I meet and interview, the ones that are doing it with a formula and doing it right, they're all happy. And the ones that are, I don't know, maybe haven't dedicated any time, energy, effort, or money into bringing on a consultant like myself or Dee Dee, they're all not happy. It's interesting to see money makes you happy in the nonprofit world, I guess. I don't know. So why don't you get us fired up and get us started down this track of six-figure fundraising and what that looks like?
Well, it begins with having a plan, and it means getting rid of your tin cup and stop begging for money and chasing money. What if you never just had to ask for money again, but money came? And it has to come with my formula. And I know because I've lived this and done this. I've walked in the shoes as the volunteer, the nonprofit founder, founded a few of those, as a matter of fact, and the fundraiser, the major gifts officer. And I've done it the hard way, and I've done it the easy way. And when I'm asking, inviting, enrolling people with a joyful ask and allowing them to be part of the transformation that the nonprofit, the organization provides for individuals, there's where the joyful gifts come from. Not when you have a leaky boat and you're running out asking for corks to keep the boat from sinking. It's too late, and that's the wrong ask. It's the wrong attitude. So get rid of the tin cups and use a formula that works and use it over and over again and love waking up in the morning and being who you are and when being so excited when you wake up that you know that there's wonderful work to do to serve the people you serve, not the status quo. Serve the people you serve at the highest level. And when you do that, you're going to attract the very best donors and you're going to offer them opportunities to give a joyful gift.
You know, I'm going to have to shoot Patrick Kirby a text here and tell him I have a new favorite guest. He's got amazing energy. If you haven't heard Patrick Kirby, go back into the archives of the Nonprofit Architect podcast. Listen to him. He's got amazing energy with each and every syllable. Dee Dee's already taken notes. She's going to contact him later today. But what a great attitude to have in the nonprofit world. And I know so many professionals in the nonprofit world, you get this, what did my last guest call it? This is being recorded last week of March 2021, and I think we just released an episode with Cynthia Gregory, and she talks about compassion fatigue. You are just in the slog and working hard, and because of all the work you're doing trying to help people, it wears you out. And apparently, everyone that feels that way needs DD's formula here. If you don't have DD's formula, you're not doing it right. I know you have a freebie, sixfigurefundraising.com/free gift. Go ahead and grab that. I'm sure DD would love to send you some information about how easy it is to get started down this path. But joyful giving, enrolling donors, having them be part of the solution, it sounds like story branding and a great way to really, you know, place the donor as the hero of the story.
Absolutely. And you know what? Can you imagine having major donors call you and say, "Hey, DD, how can I help? What do you got going on over there?" This is what happened even with lapsed donors, right? It was amazing. And I loved what I was doing so much. And I had so many people asking me, "What is going on with you? Can you help us like make more money at our events, at what we're doing on a daily basis?" That I had to leave my full-time job to start this. And pouring into other people, I mean, I'm in legacy mode now. I want to pour into everybody that's willing to get rid of the status quo, have, you know, disenfranchised donors be feeling like you're just dialing for dollars. It doesn't work. It wears you out. You want to go find another job. I mean, there's a reason nonprofit professionals don't last more than 18 months, I understand, is the kind of the national average. Why? How can you impact? How can you get to know the major donors that way? That's a disservice to your nonprofit. So if you can stay and we can change these attitudes a little bit, if you can take care of yourself and have a six-figure mindset, you could have a six-figure, multi-six-figure event that you grow year after year. You can invite donors, you can enroll them in your cause with joy, repeat giving, and joyful opportunities to transform your organization, your world, everybody around you. Listen, philanthropy means the love of humankind. And if you're doing philanthropy, you're loving your job, you're loving the people you serve, and you are enrolling people to help change the bottom line. And not just for now, but year round and years to come. You have to imagine what your organization is going to look like 3 years from now in order to reverse engineer that. You need to reverse engineer that. If you are just trying to fundraise to keep the doors open, that's not a joyful outcome for your donors. And it's a disservice to the people you're serving. You're not willing to be that person, to think bigger and bring your board and everybody together to serve at a greater level. What if you served at such a great level that your organization got to go out of business because you solved a problem? I've had a client do that as well. I think if you can leave with anything today, it is this. And that is, it is a disservice to let interested donors walk away without the opportunity to partner with you to serve humankind in a way to bring joyful outcomes to all parties. This is a win-win-win. It is not a money grab.
So how do you do that? How do you get out of nonprofit purgatory and start living that joyful life?
You know, first, you know, Travis, it starts with mindset. You have to stop going in and thinking, "Oh, I got to go to the office and they want me to call 5 donors today. And I have a quota. So I just need to meet that. Whatever I do, I got to like bring in the $50,000 this month. And oh, by the way, when I do, I am done for the month," right? That's like a menial sales job.
That sounds like the worst sales job. It's like you're in a phone bank and everyone's got the same sheet that they're dialing from. It's a call center. You're not a call center. You're not there to just call prospective donors, current donors, or lapsed donors. That's not what we're here for.
Not at all. It is so much bigger. And if your heart can't absolutely match the transformation that the organization you're working with, maybe just start there, right? Start with, "I absolutely love the work that we do to transform humanity." And that could be animals. It can be our planet. It can be individuals. But first of all, at least love the transformation you provide. And, you know, I think we need open communication with our board, our executive directors, our development people. Fundraising isn't just for like the person that got that assignment, go out and find the money. It's everybody. And the best part is, and I love, love, love this when I get to talk to a board, is you're all here to fundraise. But here's the best part. I don't want any of you asking for money from anybody. Because it's not about just getting money. It's about enrolling people they know and letting them know why they're on the board and how much they love the transformation the organization provides. And could they invite them in to be part of this transformation? See, when you're asking for money, I want you to imagine that there's this gigantic salad bar that you're going to, right? And when you go to a salad bar, do you just eat lettuce? Or do you want everything?
I'm going to jump in and say, no, I do not just eat lettuce. And not because lettuce sucks. And it does. Let's be honest. It's all filler, no killer. But it's just not, it's not something that you can just be sustained off of. You can't go with just the lettuce. It's no good.
So imagine that donors, you want to invite these donors in, and their wealth is actually a gigantic salad bar. But when you're just asking for money, 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 they're thinking of like, what can I just peel off and either shut you up and make you go away? Or, you know, here's a gift, here's $100, here's $1,000. Folks, that's coming from the lettuce portion of their wealth.
Wait, that's wait, there's more?
There's more. And when you get to know them, they might give you access to the roast beef and the multiple salads. You know, there might be some oysters on the half shell with a glass of champagne. And these are all assets hidden in homes, in insurances, businesses, 401ks. You've got stocks, you have bonds. So don't just offer to ask for just cash out of the salad bar. When you get to know people and they love the transformation you provide, they're going to reach in their arsenal because it's going to bring them joy to bring more prosperity to you.
Yeah. And besides, you should be asking for Bitcoin anyway, let's be honest. Yeah, just give me 5 or 6 Bitcoin a year. No big deal. Which I think right now would be $300,000 a year. So definitely.
That's right. I think it's at 51 today.
I was at 51 today. Okay. I don't follow day-to-day stocks because I would drive myself nuts because I know what type of person I am and I would stop eating. Bad things would happen. I'm just not even going to get into it. I have kind of an obsessive personality when I get on certain things and something that changes as much as the stock market, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I know where my success, I know where my zone of genius is. It is not there. I have people for that. So what does this look like? Like they say, you know, Didi, I want you to come in. We're going to do this thing. What does that look like to the prospective nonprofit that's getting you, your 30 years of experience, and people are staring down at the $10 million 2019 that you did? I know you already had $500,000 March, so people need to get on board on that. During COVID, $500,000 March is good stuff. Like, what are people signing up for?
Well, to be honest, I take very few one-on-one clients anymore. I'm really busy and I want to train as many people as possible in my six-figure fundraising formula. So I do classes. They are usually in 3-month increments and we're taught group. And I come in and coach, put you in the hot seat, answer all the questions we can. So I can give you the tools to go out and you can serve your world in a bigger and better way. I have clients as far as Switzerland, London, all over the United States. It is a joy to be able to pour into people so they can use this. But people who might hire me to maybe do an event, I'm also a professionally trained auctioneer. And so I come in and show you my six-figure gala formula. If you didn't want to take the class, if I'm working with you one-on-one or doing a board coaching, you're going to get this kind of energy. And I want people to stop thinking small. So if I were to come in and do your gala, we're going to go look at every single minute. And is it monetized? Is it missionized? And we're going to get rid of entertainment, long, boring speeches. we are there to enroll every single individual in the transformation the nonprofit provides for humanity. It's a philanthropy event, and we want everybody there to be able to give a gift that's meaningful and joyful to them in some way that fits the psychological profile of them that attend and of those that attend. And we want to have long-term sustainability post-event. So we're going to do something that matches every individual. And the five individuals that come to a gala, you have your bargain hunter with a silent auction. You better make sure you're getting return on investment there. If not, you better get rid of it. It's a time waste. It's a time suck. And it's not very good for the people who donate if their products are selling less than fair market value. Our second individual that comes is a gambler. They like raffles and games. So there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of that, but making sure that it is being monetized and those are moving through the crowd. So if you can go back and look at the dollars per minute that brought in, is that income worth it? The third individual is a competitive bidder. You know, there is a reason you have a live auction at a gala, and that is because you're not going to get $20,000 at the paddle raise out of the competitive bidder. He likes to leave with something. And so find 3 to 5 items. You do not need to go spend money for these. The best items are the exclusive items that are tied to your organization. And so we're going to go dig deep on that. And if you make $80,000 in 3 to 5 minutes, that was probably a pretty doggone good use of 5 to 7 minutes for that kind of return. You gave a joyful opportunity for your competitive bidder. But the most important is your philanthropist. And the philanthropist comes to this event to make sure that you are monetizing minutes, and they want to be part of that transformation. They want to give a joyful gift with no strings attached. This is give a gift directly to the organization. And your opportunity for that whole time is to be thinking, this is not a money grab event. This is donor enrollment. This is your biggest enrollment event of the year. It's not a party. Because you never go to a party and have a fundraiser break out.
I can honestly say that's never happened to me. Never happened to me even once. Who do you not want at your event? Who are you trying to avoid getting them in your show, and you want them to not be there?
Oh, Travis, that's the best question ever. We call them the reveler. And that is, you know, how oftentimes you just think, well, we're just going to sell the tables and then the guests will bring people. But go back and do your donor analytics and see the dollars per seat revenue return. And you're going to see there's some people who were revelers. They came, somebody else bought their ticket, and they came to eat and drink and distract. And the last thing you want in the room is that drunken distractor when you're trying to do your paddle raise, when you're doing that transformation, when you're allowing everybody to give that joyful gift. And they waste space. You want to displace them in the future. You want to replace them with people that you can enroll as long-term joyful givers. So yeah, there's always a reveler or two. And believe me, you do not need to get people drunk to give to your cause. If you do, you better go back and look at what you're doing, who you're serving, because if people can't give an undrunken gift in a joyful way, look back at that marketing, look at your messaging, your storytelling, and don't feel like you need to get people drunk to loosen them up to give money. What a terrible way to go about raising money.
Yeah, especially if you look at the world of consent, and we're not going to go into the world of consent, but did they actually give you permission to give that money? And is there buyer's remorse? Are they trying to get that money back after the event? I know that if I go to events, switching gears here, I'm a huge asset to any event that I go to. I'm bubbly, I like to talk, but there is a danger. And I talked to Dee Dee about this beforehand. If I am not engaged, if I'm distracted or bored, I turn into the reveler and I start causing problems because that's just my personality. So if you can't keep me engaged, do not invite me to your event. I'm only going to cause problems. I know what kind of person I'm in. I'm okay with being the kind of person that I am. But if you keep me engaged, one of the biggest blessings you'll have in any show. So that's interesting. You definitely want to get philanthropists, not so much the bargain hunters. Definitely avoid the revelers, but you want the gamblers and you want the competitive bidders. That's good. I didn't realize that there was different types of people that show up to these events. And I mean, I imagine there would be, but I could never give it any real thought. But I have been solicited for events. We had an event here in town with a good friend of mine, Ed Polito. And you can go back and listen to his show. He runs the JDME Heart of a Lion Foundation. But he had an event and he was selling tables just like that. And I'm curious to know what his dollar per seat was and how that worked out. Big difference between getting people at an event and getting the right people at an event.
Donor magic. It's donor magic. And your donors.
Yeah, I know that when I'm like setting up guests, I do a lot of pre-interviews with people that never end up recording an episode, not because they're not quality people, not because they don't have something to offer, not because they're not interesting people, but I got to make sure that I'm getting the right guests to meet my audience needs, and that's not everybody. So I go through quite a bit of work, quite a bit of phone calls, quite a bit of Facebook messages and emails, and even quite a few pre-interviews, and I don't end up recording with everybody, and it's not because I'm a snob or some kind of jerk that says, oh, I've got a show, you've got to like qualify yourself. I want to make sure you as the audience are getting the right guests to provide the right value that's going to help you. And if it doesn't help you, then why am I bringing them on the show?
Hey, Travis, I have a case study for you on this. So I was hired to come in and I had a group, I believe the most money they ever made was around, you know, $260,000. And they had 700 people coming to their event every year. And so, of course, my first instinct is, oh, brother, either they have to listen to me or they're not a right fit client, right? Because they already have all these people who are coming and it's 90% revelers. So I was up for the challenge and I said, here's the deal. I'm going to make a couple suggestions to you. And if you're willing to listen to me and do this, I know it sounds risky to you, but the cost on this event has you like, you know, granted they raised 260, but I think when they were all done with the party, they were only netting about $60,000. Right. So it was, and they were just like, well, this is, you know, it's cultural, it's fun. People come, they get dressed up, they stay all night. And this is the event. I said, well, it's not the fundraising event for you. And so we cleverly reduced the crowd by 50%. And what we did was go in and vet the very best givers and give them an opportunity to buy their table with the caveat that they're going to bring people to their table that are interested in the cause. So not only did we reduce the crowd to 300 people, we reduced the cost exorbitantly, right? Massive reduction in cost. And the next event at the end, we had $320,000 raised. So, you know, it seemed incredibly risky to them. But we just went in and did some serious trimming. And it had to become a different event. It wasn't the social event of the year. It was the event to provide social welfare of the year.
Jim Collins talks about this concept from good to great, talks about having the right people on the bus, because your cost per person to put on the event went down immensely, but your cost per person went up exponentially because you went from 260 to 320, but you brought your numbers down from 700 down to 300 people. So you get the right quality people in that had the right cause, mission, vision, all of those things that were willing to give, and they understood why they were there. They weren't revelers causing problems like I might if I get bored. They might not be, you know, the kind of person you want to. But I feel like so many nonprofits are still in this, you mentioned earlier, the tin cup mode where they're just begging for people. Just, I mean, go, like if you go to, I don't know, any event, pick an event and pick a random five people and say, you are now my new best friends. You're not going to do that. You don't know what you're getting into. You don't know, you know, if they have adverse habits, maybe they drink too much or gamble or do drugs or whatever the thing is. You don't know if they go to the gym and you're trying to go to the gym. You don't know if they're a golfer and you're a bowler or whatever the thing is, right? Because we're the average of the five people we hang out with. So why would you have people to come to your cause if they didn't meet certain criteria? And this is setting their boundaries, changing the mindset, looking at this. And you have to have the, you have to take the risk, right? We are not in the business of nonprofits. We are nonprofits that are a business And we have to have this entrepreneurial mindset to go out and try new things. All of the hundreds of nonprofits I've talked to since COVID started, all of the ones that continue to ask and continue to change and try new things, they had their best year ever, on record, all of them, 100% of those people I just described. And everyone else wasn't willing to change, wasn't willing to do new things, stopped asking for money. And most of those, not all of those, many of them are closing their doors because for whatever reason, they thought a time of global crisis was not a good reason, when really it's a better reason to continue asking to bring people on board and help with your mission, vision, and cause.
I had a client last year that we raised an additional almost six figures for. And I'm just so saddened. I've never had anyone just really take this mode. But they just said, you know, while the world is in pause, we're going to be on pause. And I said, are you kidding me? The world is not on pause. We all haven't, you know, gone into some kind of tube and we're hibernating until this thing is over. People are living and breathing. Heartbeats are still happening. People have needs. And, there is a crisis happening, but the world has not stopped spinning and we are still in forward momentum. And I think what's different is, you know, George Jetson's world has come to us and it's a reality and we're going to be navigating in a different way. But our problems haven't been solved. And, you know, people in need have not frozen the need they have to live day by day. And if anything else, it is the perfect time to think differently and come out of this with, you know, new gloves on and new thinking and taking on the world and solving these problems. We know people are still incredibly generous. They're more generous than they ever have been, especially now. And what a fabulous opportunity to enroll people to your cause. When they have less going on in their mind, they're not even leaving their homes. My virtual galas are killing it. And, you know, they're 1 hour long. We're not going to bore them to death. And also, I'm hearing this too, like, people are, you know, zoomed out and there's fatigue. Well, the fatigue is bad video and bad production and bad information, boring. You know, I'm using Zoom live to do virtual galas. We aren't streaming. We aren't creating delays. We're not spending money we don't need to spend to get the message out. And a 45-minute to 1 hour opportunity to enroll everybody on that screen that we can actually see in live time so we can do a little NLP, neurologic linguistic programming. We're like taking in the faces we see and making sure our message is engaging them, and providing opportunities, explanations to give, why to give, and how to transform right then and there, lifetime. You don't need to spend a lot of money to fancy it up if your messaging is compelling.
I want to jump into, change gears a little bit, because we're talking a lot of theory and theology and what we like and don't like about the nonprofit world. But let's get it down into the nitty-gritty and talk about your five-step program. Step number one, I'm guessing that has something to do with transformation.
You're absolutely right. Number one, if you don't know the transformation that you are providing to your clients and to the world, then you probably aren't a fundraiser.
So you got to know the transformation, the impact you're having. No one cares about your mission, right? There's thousands of organizations with the same mission. What is the impact that they're having? How are they actually doing that? What's the transformation taking place? And how are you doing that?
What would your clients say that you have done to change their life? It's gratitude, right? So we're going to dig deep into step number one. You know, I have the tools and the workshops to do that. And you have 100% clarity in order to move to the next step. And that is to identify your prosperity. Notice I didn't say identify keeping your doors open. That's not prosperity.
But I got to call five people every day, Dee Dee. I got to call five people. Is that not what that is?
Not at all. Identifying your prosperity is, where do you want to be 3 years from now, 5 years from now? put yourself in a time tunnel and imagine like 5 years from now, you're sitting on a beach on that well-deserved paid vacation. And what exactly is it you are so grateful for? It's very different than the place you walked out of the door today. Imagine a greater prosperity and higher service to those that you serve. That's a different place than you have right now.
Transformation. What transformation you're providing? Identify your prosperity. What are we looking at for number three?
Third one, just invite interested donors, right? If you have one and two, can you imagine how easy it is to invite interested donors? I mean, this is the difference from like door-to-door sales when you were a kid. It's like, well, you just buy these seeds because you need to buy the seeds because I need to sell the seeds, right? What kind of mission is that? If you have a transformation that selling those seeds is going to do, and you're going to identify the prosperity because of what these seeds can grow into, don't you think you'd have some interested donors? And so since it's not door to door, you're going to identify these first two steps to invite donors. Did I say ask them for money? No, it's not a money grab. We're inviting people to be part of your transformation, this amazing new place you're going to, beyond keeping the doors open.
You know, every time you say money grab, I picture like that glass phone booth that have like the dollar tornado that you do for your birthday. And you just try to grab a bunch of money. Every time you say money grab, I just picture that. What a terrible way to look at philanthropy. What a terrible way to look at what it is that you're doing. And it's no wonder there's so many people that are turned off anytime you talk about fundraiser. They're just like, oh, another one of these type of events, another one of these things. Well, no wonder you're disenfranchised. No wonder you're disenfranchised. Why would you want to go something like that if that's what you're dealing with?
Well, first of all, you have the mindset of the donors not even wanting to come because they know your MO, right? But like, what's even going on inside your own organization? I worked at a place once where like kind of the year-end gift would come and you're waiting for like that woman to ring the bell. And ring the bell means that $1 million gift came in and guess what? We're all done. We made budget. It's like, what about beyond budget, right? So talk about a money grab and you know how deflating it is that the rest of you don't matter now. The big gift came in and you little fundraisers, you know, I was a major gift officer at that time. But you know, when the big gift came to, you know, the head of marketing, we were all done. We, yay, celebrate. I'm like, what are we celebrating, right? Are we all done? What about all these other gifts and the other opportunities for people? And wow, that's broken thinking.
The budget's the foundation. The budget is the lowest mark. It's the keep the doors open mark.
That's right. And there was no identifying the new prosperity. It's like, we're going to continue to do this the way we've always done it. And nothing more. We've never raised more than that. So it must not be possible. And we're just going to be grateful and happy just doing what we've done the way we've been doing it for 50 years. And don't tell us anything different. And I guarantee you won't invite anything new with that.
I mentioned before we started recording here that I've been referred to recently as the nonprofit heretic because of things that I talk about and the things that I teach. People are not interested in hearing because it's some new way. It makes it easier. It gets them out of purgatory. And why would they want to enjoy their time in nonprofit work? It is so far away from the status quo that they can't even understand it as a concept. I've got happy clients and I've got people that have said they're not interested because those are the only two options. You either say yes and you're a happy client and you love what's going on. You have more money in your pocket. You have more time to deliver programs, which is the only reason people get into nonprofit work. And they're able to spend time with their families and actually enjoy life. And there's the people that say, no, thanks, Travis, I'm not interested. That's the only two people I talk to. It is amazing to see the difference.
Well, and isn't it great we don't chase people, right? We just invite people in who want to joyfully transform and also have happy donors.
It's amazing. Well, like all the people that I talk to behind the scenes, all the different organizations I talk to, and I talk about Patrick a lot He's such a wonderful man. And now Dini is in the rotation for top people that I know and talk about because there's such a joy in what it is that we do. And we talk to so many professionals in the world that you get them on Zoom and they look like Walter from Jeff Dunham, just that grumpy old man puppet. And they're just like, another one of these things. And they're not happy to be. Why are you in this world? Why are you in the nonprofit world to give like the space where people work their tails off to help everybody and you're grumpy and upset? What is the deal? Why are you doing this? Well, I want to do something that matters. Well, doing what matters ain't making you happy, my friend. Why are you in here in this kind of space? In this kind of, I don't understand it. I don't get it at all.
I'll tell you, Travis, when I can wake up in the morning, that I'm so grateful to wake up in the morning. Because I know, like, I might get to talk to Travis today, or I might get to speak to, you know, a wary fundraiser that had no idea that there was this transformation coming, or one of my clients are going to call and just say, you know, can you just lift me up today? I'm, you know, I just need a little more, you know, I need a pep talk, or I can show you how to make $100,000 more at your next event. How can I not wake up joyful every single day? Because there is somebody to serve and bring the joyful prosperity and this hope. And it's so easy. It is so easy. It's not hard anymore.
But I have to be in pain to serve people, don't I? Don't I have to go through the martyr process in order to be redeemed at the end of my nonprofit service?
Gosh, well, don't get me going there because I did go to
I'm using really the pre-interview against you. That's what I'm doing right now. Okay. No, back on. We got to get back on track here. Transform, identify, invite. And then you have the joyful ask. What the heck is a joyful ask?
This is the opportunity to match the donor's joyful gift that they are willing to give. What level is it that they can reach into their heart and soul? What level would bring you great happiness now to invest, to partner, and to give at the organization?
Wait, you don't say, can I have $9? You don't say that?
Well, you know, I don't like that. And I also don't like this. And I don't like scrubbing clients to find out what their potential is and what that big number that I need to ask and invite them to give. I don't think it's authentic. And I think if your cause is good enough, that they will give a level that is joyful and meaningful to them. And it's going to be bigger than what you're probably going to ask. And, you know, that first gift might be a test gift. And depending on how you treat them and appreciate them and keep them in the fold of the transformation you're providing, they're going to give more gifts. But to look at people like ATMs and like their money, like now you're going to have that spinning money machine like in my head all day, right? Thanks for that.
You're welcome. I'm here for you.
Yes. Thank you, Travis. It's not that. We're looking at human beings. And you know what? We're giving them an opportunity to reach in beyond the salad bar to, you know, the prime rib, the caviar. They're going to decide what you deserve and have earned based on the transformation and the communication that you are giving to them.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about communication and transformation. I've been on a rant lately of talking about how crappy most nonprofit websites are. And I'm not talking about, are they pretty? They're almost all of them are just a stinking digital pamphlet. You never put out new information on there. You don't have a blog, a podcast, or a blog where you're creating reasons for people to come back to your website. And I just imagine, you know, you have a call with someone, they go hop online, they check to see who you are, and they look at this outdated website. Something that has your three, you know, executive directors ago is still on the website. Your contact number is not updated. And there's no value that you're providing about your mission anywhere on there. You're not saying what your impact is. You're not saying, you know, what politician you're connecting to talk about and promote your cause and what you're fighting for. You're not talking about your new partners. And what a terrible way to bring them into the fold when you have this crappy, outdated website. You would think there'd be like a call to action, like I have that service. I don't, but this is just me on a soapbox. Get your websites in order, people. Come on.
Exactly. And you know what? If you are the fundraiser, get out there and be talking, be an evangelist, be the, you know, you don't even have to go ask for money, But can you get out there, please, and tell everybody about what a great cause? I can't believe how many people say we are the best kept secret in the world. Holy cow.
What a terrible thing to say about yourself. Why would you want to be a best kept secret? What advantage does that give you? Does that allow you to keep your humility intact while also not raising any money? What is the benefit of that statement?
There is zero benefit in being a secret. Number one, you need more clients probably to serve. What if there's somebody out there that could really, really use your service and they don't know about you? But the worst thing in the world is you are disallowing interested donors to give a joyful gift. How dare you not allow somebody to give a gift that can transform you and take you into the future prosperity? You, without asking, you have answered no to everybody.
Yep. Everyone you don't ask is already a no. I talked to a gal out in, it's just north of the Bay Area out in California. And she talked my ear off for 2.5 hours about her cat rescue and what she's doing. I'm not interested in cat rescue. It's not my thing. But like, I couldn't contain myself because like there was so much energy coming out of this woman. I'm like, you must have like money falling from the heavens for you. And then she told me the big secret. Is that she never asked anybody for any money because somehow she felt it was wrong. And I looked up the city that she was in. There's about 30,000 people. You know, it's kind of in the metropolis, the megalopolis of, you know, the West Coast out there. So all the cities are jammed together in some areas. And I'm like, just in your town alone, you're getting 30,000 no's each and every time that you don't ask. You're getting 30,000 no's every single day. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you have that much energy, that joy, that passion. You're making a real impact and a difference, and you're keeping it to yourself. I'm like, you're just signing yourself up to never be funded in any way, shape, or form, and just to continue struggling. I was like, why are you preventing people from blessing you? Are you the only one that can bless the other people, the other animals in your area? No one else is allowed to bless anyone? Because that's what you're saying. And it comes from, back to your number one, goes back to the mindset. There's not a limited amount of money here. There is not 3 organizations in town doing the same thing, so I can't ask for money. You can get money from anywhere. You don't have to get the same 10 donors that they talk to every year. You don't talk to those same people. You can talk to, I don't know, the other 330 million people in America or the 7. Whatever billion we're up to in the world. There is plenty, plenty, plenty to go around. And there's ways to do this. You don't have to be in this finite, limited scarcity mindset anymore. I want to know what the last thing is, and actually the last thing has a lot to do with the first thing, because it's thank you. It's gratitude, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't tell you how many clients. Now, believe me, I get really, really angry at this because I donate money to every event that I go to, even if I'm working the event. So what if you hire me? Yeah, I've been to auction school, so I can talk like that. But I did that because I went to a terrible event once, and I knew I could do better if I could be professionally trained. So that's just another hat I wear.
Is this the worst event you've ever been to? Because I was going to ask you about that.
It just happens to be that event, as a matter of fact.
Tell us about the worst event you've ever been to.
Then I'll come back and talk. Thank you. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
The worst event, I was invited by this philanthropist. And he said, Didi, I want you to sit at my table and see this event. And these people, I think, might be able to use your help. And I thought, oh, yeah. People always invite me to go to a gala, sit at their table because they have a worse event than the last one I've been to. So I went joyfully, right? And I could not believe that this was nothing but drink. And, you know, they said, well, we got to get people liquored up so they get loose with their money. I'm like, okay, ding, there's one thing wrong. And, you know, the food was awful. I mean, I didn't come for the food, but I'm like, gosh, we really just could have done better. Why would we even have a sit down dinner and spend all this money? Because when you're sitting and eating and all this stuff, they're costing dollars per minute, right? Well, there was no income generation while we were drinking and eating. So look at that, an hour and a half of wasted everything. Then they brought out the raffle, and you're going to buy a box of candy, and somebody that bought the candy is going to win the necklace. Well, you know, at the end of the night, oh, shoot, the one box that was the winning necklace still wasn't picked yet. So they had to go up and see the first person can run up here for $35 gets it, and womp, womp. Okay, so that was poorly done. Then they had a comedian that they've known for years come on up, and he's going to ask for money. Well, he started insulting the donors, and at one point he even said, and it was a Christian organization, he goes, baby Jesus is crying in the manger because you people are so cheap. So, I mean, it was just hideous. It was appalling. Nobody was raising their paddle at this point. They were drunk. It was a
drunk and angry, right?
Drunk and angry. Absolutely. Then we had to exploit somebody so we could all see why we should give money at that portion of the evening. And here comes a pregnant, crying woman. And she is on the stage crying, telling her sad story. It was so painful. And it just kind of took me back to my childhood where, you know, I wound up in foster care under some very, you know, difficult circumstances. And here they're willing to exploit someone that could have been my mother to tell a story. And I felt so, so saddened. And then the CEO got up. He'd had a few, made a very derogatory comment. And then it was time to raise more money, get your paddle up. And it was the most cringe-worthy event. And so I found out later, because they actually hired me, that they'd spent $47,000 at that event to raise 33. And that's when I knew we could turn it around. So the following year, we raised $167,000, changed up the crowd, got rid of people who didn't give, got rid of that mean auctioneer comedian guy. And we did a very joyful event. And we had an event where we didn't exploit anybody. We had a different type of communication. We had a success story come up with a woman who had finished school and was now a taxpayer, and her children are in school, and she had her own place to live, because that's the different kind of success story you want. You don't want a battered person in the trenches. You want to show the investment and the holistic solution that you create, that you invest in a human.
It's the mission versus the impact. When you went up there the first time, it was the mission. This is what we're trying to fix. And the second time you went back when you were in charge, you're showing the impact, the transformation of what it is that your programs do. You cannot promote the good things you're doing enough. If you're out there, you have this huge heart for this cause, you're doing good things, your programs are effective, showcase the wins. I know we've been taught in this country that we're not allowed to celebrate the wins. And if you are listening to this right now and you don't have anyone to celebrate your wins with, call me, send me a message. I love, love, love celebrating wins, because you winning doesn't take away any of my wins. I know this inherently, that I and everyone I know are a group of winners, and they can win, and that doesn't prevent me from winning. Please, 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 if you're listening to this, maybe this is the first episode you're listening to, get into my network and be in a group of people that will celebrate with you. Please, please, please. I've been there. I've been a 5-time foster kid. I understand what you're talking about. The reason I do this is to help you all do it better, because the kid you might be helping might be Travis or the next Dee Dee. Wouldn't you like to have the next Dee Dee that you're helping? Goodness gracious, wouldn't we all be in a joyful place?
Oh, thank you, Travis. I just want to say that the final thing that you must do is thank your donors. And so, like I said before, when I go to an event, I give a gift and I want to see if I'm getting thanked. And I can come back and say, hey, you know what? That gift wasn't good enough to thank. Did you thank the other people? And oftentimes, I'm not kidding you, 80% do not thank, because they say Monday, I was so tired after that event, and then we had to get on to the next thing, that we didn't get around to it. And you know what? Good luck next year if you think you're going to scale. And even with that particular client that hired me, I found out that, lapsed donors, unthanked donors from the gala, good luck getting them back. You know, they do have a point where you know, like that foster kid, you know, there's a point you're sick of being kicked in the head and you're going to move on and you're going to release people that don't appreciate you. And you're going to let those go that just assume you'll always be there. And they're going to go somewhere where they're appreciated. And that's where we should all be every day. Is are you being appreciated, and are you appreciating those around you, particularly your donors?
I did an interview with Brady Josephson from Next After, and they do the research and all get all the numbers compiled. And I can't remember if it was 12 or 14% of organizations actually thank their donors. Do something radical. Actually thank the people that help you make that impact that you're trying to make. Be radical. Do that.
When I've even had donors, you know, I've had some major donors that I worked with throughout the years, major philanthropists, call me today and say, Dee Dee, I'm on the prowl for a new place that's going to make me feel appreciated. Who needs help out there? People are calling me to send them to a place to give their money. Nonprofit people, you're not doing your job. You shouldn't be secrets out there. There should be so many options for philanthropists to give and know about you. And yet, you know, they can't know about you if you're not. You get out there telling the transformation you provide. Joyful. We're welcoming you to come and learn about the transformation we provide, right? Do philanthropists have to go be digging up rocks and looking for a place to give their money? Oh, shame on you.
What a different perspective to be able to look at the nonprofit world, the joy of our heart, and actually make it the joy of our life and enjoy what we do each and every day and provide a path to invite people to come along in your journey to see the impact and to live in the attitude of gratitude. Get yourself out of that nonprofit purgatory. Go to sixfigurefundraising.com or benefitauctions.com. Get yourself a world-class fundraiser like Dee Dee and stop having these galas that are not worth the effort that goes into them.
Thanks. I welcome you to my training. I would love to help change your mindset and have you just have such abundance that you deserve. And I'm here to help you every step of the way with a training or an event or any other way that I can serve you. And, you know, I'm just so, so grateful for you and the work you do, working in the trenches and doing what you do, because philanthropy is a love for humanity.
Absolutely, Dee Dee. Thanks for being on the show. Connect with Dee Dee at sixfigurefundraising.com. Check out that free gift if you do, sixfigurefundraising.com/free gift, and get on board with Dee Dee. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.